Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. There's been a massive shift in Western culture in terms of authority, and you may not have really given this much thought, but I think when you hear it, you're going to recognize the ring of truth. It's a shift in authority from adults to children and adolescents. It is a shift in perceived wisdom from the young, to the young, from the old. Dinah West, in her book, The Death of the Adult, writes about the fact that we have now this entire rise of the wise child. And by the way, on television you see this. In the sitcom, it's generally the child who is the source of wisdom. The parents have to eventually, adults have to eventually come to terms with the wisdom of the child. What we have is a massive shift that began, especially in the 1950s, good tracing in terms of the cultural analysis there through the 60s, but it wasn't temporary. It turns out to be permanent. Dinah West writes in an article at In Character, "When your average doting adult today murmurs the expression out of the mouths of babes, it is less an expression of wonder than a validation of the widely held assumption that children, babes, tweens, and teens, are innately wiser than their elders. They know better, sexual and fashion choices. They're discerning, music. They feel, therefore, they understand, politics. Or so we have come to think due to a stunning, if underappreciated, cultural reversal. Once upon a time, we believed wisdom was an expression of experience and maturity. Today, we believe the exact opposite." Now, folks, what we're talking about here is something that ought to have our attention. She's onto something with her analysis that ought to be a reality check. And especially Christian parents, Christians of whatever generation, should be paying attention to this, because what is shown on the sitcom and becomes the laugh line becomes the theme of the culture. What is perceived in terms of marketing, advertising, and consumerism is what pretty quickly becomes the reality in the life of the family. We're talking about here a shift in authority that is, frankly, running counter to the revelation of God in the Bible, the perceived wisdom, received tradition of generation after generation. What we're talking about here is not a desire to try to see children once again out of sight and out of mind. That's not it. It is to understand that there's a difference between the adult and the child. And it ought to be the child's aspiration to grow up and be an adult, not, and you check and see if you do not see this all around us, the adult's aspiration to appear as an adolescent. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I wrote an article about this on my website today at albertmohler.com. It's entitled Seen But Not Heard. I do think you'll find it interesting as you have the opportunity to go and check it out at the website. I provide you the link to Dinah West's article at In Character. And also information about, other trends and analysis that are pointing to the same fundamental reality. Who's in charge here? In all too many cases, it's implied to be the child. Again, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, to review some other issues in the news. Donkeys are often preaching to elephants. That's the analysis of Peter Smith writing here in the Louisville Courier-Journal. It's a very interesting article indicating, he's speaking there of Presbyterians in particular, that there is a significant divergence in many denominations and churches between the worldview of the minister and that of the congregation. I love the way he put it. I think it's very clever. Donkeys often preaching to elephants, which is to say Democrats preaching to Republicans. I'm less interested in the partisan identification there than in the distinction of worldview. And you just think about what happened this week in Massachusetts in the special senatorial election. You just think about some of the things happening all around America that lead the cultural elites to scratch their heads and wonder. And it comes right down to this. The fact is that the people in the pews in almost all these denominations are both politically and theologically far more conservative than many of their pastors. Now, that caught the attention of Peter Smith, again, a reporter here in Louisville, Kentucky, on the issue of religion. He covers the waterfront, and in his column, this is going back to January 9, 2010, he looks at information coming from social science research and really understands that there are distinctions even denomination by denomination in terms of partisan identification and registration. Now, remember that partisan identification is at least indicative of worldview. It's not a slam dunk, one for one, but it is nonetheless indicative. And just consider some of these statistics. 74% of the Assemblies of God pastors are Republicans, compared to only 1% who are Democrats. In the Southern Baptist Convention, it's 66% Republican and 4% Democrats. In the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, among pastors, 64% are Republicans, 4 are Democrats. So there you're talking about three of the most conservative denominations, and it turns out that it looks that way in terms of the political landscape as well. But when you look at liberal Protestantism, it's quite different. 3-1 Democrat pastors in the Christian Church Disciples of Christ. 6-1, by the way, in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. That's in the United Church of Christ. And 3-1 also in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. The largest mainline body, here again reading from Peter Smith's column, the United Methodist Church and the American Baptist Churches were virtually equal. Now, why is this important? Well, it's just important, again, from the aspect of worldview analysis, because when you start thinking of the fact that your worldview begins to determine inevitably your political choices and thus your political identification, that it tells you that there are certain worldview principles and beliefs that drive you to a certain partisan identification, the participation in, support of, registration with a particular political party. When there's a distinction in of this kind of degree, and that's what makes this research really interesting, a distinction of this kind of degree between those who are the ministers and those who are sitting in the pews, then that means on a range of issues that probably go far beyond who's a donkey and who's an elephant, there is a very distinct difference between the worldview of many pastors and the people they serve. Just interesting to put that in terms of your own analysis. A Barna survey is out indicating that when you look at Americans under age 25, traditional morality is largely gone. The younger generation, more than twice as likely as all other adults, to engage in, not only, you'll notice, to lend support to, but to engage in behaviors considered morally inappropriate by traditional standards. Their choices make even the baby boomers, this is coming from the Barna Group, never regarded as a paragon of traditional morality, look like moral pillars in comparison. What does that tell you? It tells you that when a worldview begins to accept the negotiation and renegotiation of moral principles, there appears to be no end to that. So when you look at the baby boomers, and that's the point of this research, the baby boomers were themselves moral innovators. They were revolutionaries of a sort. You'll remember they were the flower children of the 60s. They were the hippies of the 60s and 70s. These were the people who were then young adults who were leading a rebellion against what they perceived as the traditional morality of their parents and grandparents. And now it turns out they look conservative compared to their own children and grandchildren on a range of issues. Now, are Americans becoming more conservative or more liberal? Well, again, worldview matters. And it turns out that on a good many issues, younger Americans are more conservative. For instance, we've talked on this program about the fact that younger Americans tend to be more pro-life than older Americans. That's good. But the issues at stake here are primarily those of personal and especially sexual morality. And there it appears that the younger you go in the population, the greater you have a kind of distinction made in their minds between big moral issues out there in society and the closest moral issues to my life, especially my sexual life. And so you're seeing them say, I think there are no rules when it comes to my sexual life, but I think there are binding moral principles out there in the larger society. Another very interesting thing has to do with interfaith marriages or interdenominational marriages. A Pew Research survey shows that more and more marriages in the United States are between people of different faiths. Very interesting here. By the way, the group most likely to have a spouse that has a very different affiliation are Buddhists and the religiously unaffiliated. Well, at least when you're talking about the religiously unaffiliated, that makes sense. Because when they marry almost anyone, unless it's someone who's unaffiliated, there's going to be some affiliation of distinction. But it is interesting that Buddhists here are those that are most likely to marry someone from a different background. Mormons and Hindus are least likely to marry a partner outside their own faith. Now, on Ask Anything Wednesday, even this week, we had a question about, for instance, an evangelical marrying a Roman Catholic. And I just want to go back to the fact that what we have here is a very clear biblical teaching that we are not to be unequally yoked, which means that to understand marriage from a Christian perspective is to understand that we are to marry someone who is a fellow believer in Christ with whom we share the faith. very interesting article out on young people and their taste for tragedy. It turns out that of the best-selling books in the young adult fiction category, an inordinate number of them are about awful, horrible, unspeakable, repetitive tragedy. Interesting to know why this generation of young people, a generation that has been largely untouched by many of the traumas of the past, seems to have an appetite to try to identify with people who've experienced extreme, massive tragedy. You know, I think it's another cry of the human heart that indicates that whatever the generation, whatever their experience, they are driven to ask the most basic questions of life, those kinds of questions that come out, in many cases, in terms of calamity. That's a good opportunity for Christians to be there with the gospel. We'll be right back with the Albert Mueller Program. All around us, there is an interesting shift going on, and it has been going on for some time now. It is a shift from the wise adult to the wise child. All around us are signs that authority and wisdom are now to be recognized in the young rather than in the old. Immaturity is now considered wise. Maturity is considered unwise. This is nothing less than a reversal of what previous generations have believed and assumed. Dinah West wrote an article at the journal In Character. It's really important, I think, tracing this particular change. Her essay has to do with the fact that, we've gone a long way from being seen but not heard when it comes to children. Now it is children and adolescents, teens and tweens, who are being heard as the voices of authority. Just consider the kind of artifacts of popular culture that are all around. Just think of the sitcoms. You turn on your television, there's the sitcom. And who is the center of gravity in the programming? Who solves the problem? Who has the wisdom? In far too many, you just look at it, it is explicitly the child who corrects the parent rather than the parent correcting the child. It's the child who's with it. It's the adult who's not with it. And you also have another phenomenon, and that is that the aspiration to be an adult has been completely transformed in our society to where now we have adults who are doing their very best to look like adolescents. We have fathers of teenagers who are dressing like teenagers, mothers of teenagers who are dressing like their daughters. We've got an embarrassing situation here. We've got 40-year-old men walking around, you know, with pants hanging on their hips as if they're hip-hop teenagers. And, you know, we've got this whole phenomenon of extended adolescence and delayed adulthood. Marketers are onto it. Just look at the kind of things they're marketing, whether it's clothing or entertainment. Certainly those who are in the entertainment business are onto it, and they've been onto it for some time. Now, where did this start? Well, at least back in the 1950s. In 1958, Dwight MacDonald, Dinah West notes, had noted the rise of the adolescent with a flood of books on parenting teens emerging from a host of experts. Now, one of the things that Dwight MacDonald noted in 1958 was all of a sudden there's a flurry of books on teens. But before, say, the late 1950s, teenagers were basically young people on the way very quickly to being adults. It was more or less like, okay, here's your adolescence, good. Now tomorrow you're going to work. There wasn't the kind of extended adolescence, the rise of the high school as a complete culture into itself that developed, especially after World War II. But by the time you get to the late 1950s, you have the teenager as the kind of center of gravity in the culture. Dwight MacDonald mentioned about the family being surrounded by a host of experts now declaring the teens to be wise. He said, quote, the list goes on. Speaking of these books, it includes many titles that would have been puzzling even in recent times because their subject matter is not the duty of children toward their parents, but precisely the opposite. Dinah West says, it is hard to overstate the significance of this change more than half a century ago. It is this fundamental rearrangement of life's building blocks that put successive decades on an entirely new footing from that all that had come before. To say the tide had turned is to imply a temporary cyclical shift. What had occurred, replacing the child's duty to his parent with the parent's duty to his child, has so far turned out to be permanent. Okay, folks, let's do some worldview analysis here. Let's think it through. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation, and of all people, we ought to be able to address this and feel compelled to address this with some keen Christian thinking. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear from you. Write us at mail@albertmueller.com. We're glad to hear from you by Twitter at /AlbertMueller, twitter.com/MuellerRadio, or Albert Mueller, and at Facebook, the Albert Mueller Program. You can write us mail, just write us at mail@albertmueller.com. Now, let's think this through for a moment. The biblical understanding of the child is not dismissive of the child, not at all. As a matter of fact, the child is an object of the parent's joy and pride and thankfulness to God. But the child is a child. And that's been a basic assumption of Western civilization from the beginning. The child is a child. There's a distinction between a child and an adult. Even during the period of adolescence, the process of adolescence, taken just as a phase of life, was intended to be the conduit from childhood to adulthood, and by the way, a fairly brief conduit, where the job of the adolescent is to begin taking on explicitly adult responsibilities very quickly so that he or she can emerge as an adult right on time. Right on time. That's not happening. Instead, what we have is adolescence valorized, celebrated, held up now not as, say, a 5 or 6 year period between, say, sexual puberty and maturity and marriage. Now you're talking about this extended period in which persons do not take on adult responsibilities, nor do they appear to even aspire to take on most adult responsibilities, but instead they just kind of roll along as teenagers far after their teens. And while they are teenagers, by the way, they are the ones considered to be the center of gravity when it comes to wisdom and authority, cultural choices, sophistication, and all the rest. How do we think about this? I think for Christian parents, this implies a particular challenge. Let's just think about this. In my article I published this morning, my argument is that Christian parents have to understand themselves as counter-revolutionaries. And a counter-revolutionary is one who steps back, observes that a revolution has happened, and said, I'm not going with it. And that's when I'm suggesting that Christian parents and Christian adults must do. We have to step back and say, wow, that was a revolution. And there it was, back in the 50s and the 60s, well into the 70s and through the 80s, there was this shift in authority from the adult to the child. And we have to look back and say, we can't go there. Now, just think about many of the families you observe, many of the young people and children you observe. They're in charge. That is, the kids. The kids are basically in charge of their own behavior. Yesterday, we talked about the fact that they are cocooned in their own rooms, where they have over 70% of them have their own television. They're surrounded with all their media. They're connected to all their friends by social media. They are the ones who are sophisticated. They're the ones who are connected. They're the ones who are in charge. You ask an educator what's going on here, and a frightening number of teachers and school administrators will tell you that what they face is a number of parents who will come to them and say, how could you correct my child? How could you discipline my child? How could you say that my child is wrong? I guarantee you that these days, most educators are on the defensive every time a parent comes in, because the child, whether an elementary school age child or a tweener or a teen, is really considered to be in charge. I guarantee you that you talk to a college administrator or a college faculty member, they'll tell you, professor by professor, that what they have with a new crop of 18-year-olds almost every year is a crop of freshmen who think they are in charge. They think that their choices are the determinant of choices. They think that their wisdom is the superior wisdom. Now, it may be, it may be that virtually every generation of 18-year-olds has been tempted to think that way, but there's been a check on that by the larger society that says, well, you know, guess what? You're not in charge, so get in line and learn from those who are teaching you. You know, what we have here is a reversal that has consequences. Just think about the absence of discipline in the lives of many children. I mean, after all, if they're the source of wisdom, then why would a parent discipline? Just think about the fact that we have this feeling in our educational institutions, if not an ideology that's taken place in educational philosophy, that our job is not really to impart knowledge and wisdom to children, but rather to draw out from them what is their own innate wisdom. Folks, that just runs completely counter to a biblical understanding of a child, the biblical understanding of what it means to grow into an adult, not to mention a Christian understanding of what it means for a parent to assume parental responsibility. Where are the adults out there? And do we know anymore the difference between an adult and a child? And if we do, do we really understand that the child should aspire to be an adult rather than the adult aspire to be a child or an adolescent? Give me a call, the number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. What do you see? What are you doing about it? How are you parenting? And what kind of kickback are you getting from those around you? Give me a call. This is the Albert Mueller Program, and we'll be right back.
Listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You know, the disappearance of adulthood as the great aspiration of American young people is something that's genuinely frightening to me. I have to tell you, I think it has dramatic effects on the young. It has dramatic effects, such as they're not ready for marriage when they should be. They're not ready for their own economic fulfillment of vocation and employment when they should be. They're not ready for the kind of educational aspiration that they should be ready for in so many cases. And they're certainly not ready in terms of the church to take on the kind of adult responsibility that adult Christians ought to carry in the church. So whether you're talking about the society at large, the small society of the marriage and the family, or you're talking about, of course, the church societies, the people of God, this perpetual adolescence comes with a tremendous cost. I'd like to know what you're seeing out there. How in the world did we arrive at this place where the young are the wise and the old are the out of touch? How do we arrive at this place where you have teenagers who really do not aspire to be adults, but you have adults who really do aspire to be teenagers? How is it that we have the wise child? Why is it on the sitcoms it's the child who is the center of gravity and wisdom, and it is the adults who learn from the child and have to get in line? Give me a call. The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'm very curious to know, are you seeing anything like this? Is this touching a nerve where you are? I've had parents who've said to me, look, I have a hard time, frankly, in parenting my own children, especially adolescents, when their peers and the parents of their peers aren't really encouraging them into adulthood, not really moving them into maturity. I think there's an enormous lethargy out there amongst a lot of parents because this cultural direction, this great shift in the culture, has in many cases robbed parents of the sense of their imperative to help their children move into adulthood. It's really shifted the game so much that there are a lot of parents who think that, well, let's put it this way, they buy into the idea that adolescence is some kind of elongated period of life in which there's very little responsibility but a great deal of freedom. Now, the goal of adolescence is that you have a teenager who's happy and entertained rather than one that is discernibly, markedly, observedly moving into maturity and getting ready for adulthood. You know, just this past week, I was looking at a report suggesting that an incredible number of 22-year-olds just, quote, are not yet ready for marriage, end quote. Well, guess what? Throughout most of human history, 22-year-olds were married. How is it that we used to be able to prepare 22-year-olds to get married, and now evidently we're not? Something's going on here. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, the anecdotes in this are very interesting, and you certainly will have your own set as you think about it. I'm thinking about all these sitcoms and movies and all the rest where the child is the center of gravity, the parent is the dunce. And you've got this writ large, not only in terms of entertainment, but in terms of educational theory. You know, I wonder how many parents know that in an incredible number of education schools, the predominating philosophy is that it is the job of the educator to draw out of the child the wisdom that resides therein, rather than to put into the child a wisdom from on high. And that means not only from God, but from adults. And who corrects whom? I think that, again, is a very interesting thing. I think the death of discipline when it comes to many children has to do with the fact that we have so many children who are serving with the authority of parents and so many parents who are subservient to their children. Again, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We've got callers on the line. We'll try to get to those calls here in just a moment. We also have very interesting response coming back, a Twitter response coming back to me just saying, look, Why should we be surprised? We've had pandering to young people and teenagers for years now. And all you have to do is look at the advertisements. That's right. All you have to do is consider to whom are people actually marketing so many of these movies? It's not to adults. It's to teenagers. Whether it's video games or, for that matter, automobiles. An interesting article came out this week indicating that children have a far larger role in choosing which car is bought by parents than car manufacturers had previously thought. After all, they're looking at, well, we talked about this yesterday, didn't we? They're looking at thousands of advertisements. They're talking constantly about such things with their peers. And in a large number of cases, they're the authority to whom the parents turn. The number is 877-893-8255. I think this shift comes with very dangerous and injurious effects in the life of the entire family, of the culture, and of the church. We'll be right back with more on the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. Good response coming in from listeners out there. Dana writes in to say, who's in charge? Children running the house, pushing parents around? We shall have none of that. Here's someone who says, I'm not going with it. Here's a counter-revolutionary. Sorry if I'm from the old school and that's just not done. Plus, the Bible says if you don't discipline your children, you hate them. There's plenty of love in this home. Praise God. Okay, now there's a confident counter-revolutionary. God bless them. Terry has said, it's sad when you see children who are in charge of their homes. You usually see this with parents who are too busy or have no family vision at all. It's very sad for the children, for they will have no sense of authority and being submissive. Parents need to stand up and take the role of their children, take the authority back from their children. We must teach our children. Yeah, absolutely. Now, it doesn't mean we never learn anything from our children, by the way. I've got two children from whom I've learned a great deal, but I never thought it was my job to be their student rather than their teacher. That's true. Every teacher is learning from students, but you do know the difference between a teacher and a student. The phone number is 877-893-8255. In Baltimore, Maryland, Jeffrey's listening on WRBS. Go ahead, Jeffrey.
Dr. Mueller, glad to be on the show. I had a question regarding the young adults not getting married and not being prepared for marriage. I'm wondering if it's the marriage that's actually growing them up rather than them having to grow up in order to get married.
Yeah, you know, I wonder about that myself too, Jeffrey. I've written and thought about this a great deal. I'll tell you, the age of first marriage right now for a young male in America is reaching 28, and for young females, higher than 26. You're talking about a quantum leap just in terms of the delay of marriage. And remember, that's an average, so about half are getting married after that. You also have puberty coming earlier than ever before. So you have this incredible period of time. And the lament I hear from so many young people and parents is, well, they're not ready to get married. And the question is, of course, why not? And Jeffrey, you may be very right that marriage is where they're finally growing up. The problem is, even though I think couples have generally grown up together somewhat in marriage, that you're bringing people who have both been in a period of this perpetual adolescence and delayed adulthood. And I think it's a pretty shaky foundation. And, you know, when I hear parents say, my child's not mature enough to get married, I'll say, well, whose fault is that? And who's going to take the charge to get them ready for marriage? Thanks for your call, Jeffrey. Great to hear from you there in Baltimore. Let's go to Traverse City, Michigan, where Rachel's listening on WLJN. Go ahead, Rachel.
Yes, my comment is, it seems as though the church is encouraging this with the constant entertainment of students from children ministries on up to the youth ministry.
Yeah.
And I guess I just wanted to know what your comment was on that, because I find you a very wise person.
Well, how kindly said, Rachel. I appreciate that. I think you're really onto something there. And the whole point of youth ministry in the church is, I think, often based on a false premise. I think you have many youth ministries in the local church who think it is their job to disciple youth and to basically entertain youth and keep them in. When I think it is the job of the youth ministry to especially prepare parents to disciple their own children and to take the responsibility, I don't think parents can just franchise that out. And the way it often comes down is just what you mentioned in terms of entertainment. If you want to hold the attention of young people, then you entertain them. And there's nothing wrong with having, you know, special events for kids and all the rest and for teenagers. But to have that become, well, really a system, a structure that implies that the child or the teenager is the center of the universe, then that's a big problem. Certainly from a Christian worldview perspective, that's a huge problem. In the local church, that's a big problem. We're not if we just merely entertain them and suggest to them that they are that they're religious consumers. They're out there just with the expectation of being entertained and thrilled and all the rest. Then we're not preparing them for any kind of responsibility in the church as adults. And that also means that we're following and tracking the trends in the culture where other authorities are not encouraging them, prodding them, pulling them to develop adult capabilities, adult mentalities, adult responsibilities. And I think that's a great problem. Rachel, I want to thank you for your call. I think the youth ministry is a place where many churches are basically playing the same game as the secular world. And I think that's going to show up with a similar kind of disaster. Thanks so much for your call. Great to hear from you there in Michigan. Let's go to Gaithersburg, Maryland. Shanna is listening on the World Wide Web. Go ahead, Shanna.
Hi, Dr. Mahler. Thank you for taking my call. I read a lot of children's literature trying to assemble a good library for my children to grow up into. And I have noticed that in the vast majority of teenage books, adolescent books that I read, there's this view of childhood and of youth as this time of innocence and play and exploration and potential, that sometimes the fun just has to end when the hard, cold world intrudes. And I think Marjorie Rowling's The Yearling would be a really good example of that mindset, that conception of childhood. And it's really the opposite of the biblical mandate to train up a child in the way they should go, the idea that when you're a child, you think like a child, and when you get older, you put away childish things, you grow into maturity. And I think that it goes back to the assumption that the human heart is inherently good. There's an idea that children are born innocent and pure, and that eventually that innocence is sullied or marred by their contact with the world. And I think that that begins to explain why people are beginning to actually look to young people as leaders and as moral authorities, because they actually believe that children's hearts are innocent.
Shanna, if I'm not mistaken, I think you sent me an email this morning I was able to look at briefly before I had to get in a schedule of meetings for the day. And I really think you are onto something. And I think when you point to the theological issue, that's what's most key. And that goes back to where I mentioned that the educators, and especially the secular educational philosophies, generally think of education as drawing out from the child the wisdom that is innately there rather than putting into the child the corrective of truth. And, of course, theologically, you just hit the nail right on the head. I mean, frankly, it's the understanding that the child is somehow morally or spiritually good or, at the very worst, neutral, and that, basically the child is the source of this spiritual wisdom. And I think you're interesting as you play that out in terms of the literature as well. You know, the reality is that you can't understand any of the scriptures' exhortation to parents about children without the understanding that the Bible assumes that children are sinners who need correction. Not that the parents are not sinners, but the parents are there as those who have grown in maturity and have the responsibility before God to educate, to nurture, to train, to chastise, to correct, to discipline, to protect the child. The distinction between the parent and the child is key. Unfortunately, out there in the secular society and in any number of theologically and biblically confused churches, it is the child who is assumed to be the source of wisdom rather than the adult. And of course, with wisdom comes implied authority. And boy, biblically, that is a disaster. We'll be right back with the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Let's go immediately to John calling from Central Pennsylvania. Go ahead, John.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Wow, I just really agreed with that whole thing of, the youth not moving on into an adult part of life. And I think a lot of that has to do with insulated from the requirement to work or the need to work. So there's a focus on leisure, focus on sports, and no real need to have to do sustenance, day-to-day survival type of things. And the level of intercommunication that's happening in the absence of intergenerational activities gives a kind of lobbying status to youth that is a powerful thing.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, I think the issue of work you're raising, John, is so crucial. I mentioned that earlier. Let's just expand upon it a little. When you look at the history of say, Western civilization, and you consider the progression through different stages of life that was experienced by most persons, they moved from infancy into childhood, from childhood into youth. It was not called adolescence. We've kind of invented this new category of adolescence. It was generally called youth. And the youth was one who was an about-to-be adult. That's basically the best way I know to put it. It was an adult in the making. And so the period of youth was very short, and work became a crucial issue. Throughout most of the centuries of our time, a boy would have been working very quickly, probably at age 12 or 13, would have been in the workplace. Apprentices were as young as 9 and rarely any older than 14, even in revolutionary America when they started their apprenticeship. And they were learning. By the way, to be an apprentice was to be a learner. He didn't go show the blacksmith how to blacksmith. He learned how to do it. He didn't show a carpenter how to do carpentry. He learned how to do it. And then he was accepted into the world of adults, and he took on that responsibility and got married and had children and moved from being a son to a father and all the rest. We have alienated young people from work, and especially from the kind of work that requires them to recognize they are being taught and formed and equipped to very quickly move from this phase of life to another. The rise of higher education is a part of that. I don't want to be hypocritical. I'm president of a college and theological seminary. But one of the concerns I have for my own students is that they do not remain as youth during the time that they're involved in this period of study. They need to be moving into adulthood all throughout this process. They need to consider college not just one thrill after another, but basically their job for this period of life until they're ready and mature right on time for the next stage. There are biblical and theological issues at stake here, and in future programs, we're going to try to trace even more of those out. The bottom line is, parents, remember, you've got a job to do. You parent. Back next time for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.